Hello, good morning, everyone. Happy Sunday. It's our 50th episode today. We reached a milestone. It's a pleasure to have AJ today with us for our special episode. Welcome. And before we start, I would like to invite Casper first to give us the usual intro of the Angel Swing.
All right. So thanks to our lovely guest and co-host here for joining in. We are the Angel Swing, an international NFT art gallery and podcast show founded by international friends who came together through our love for art and NFTs. Espresso and Johannes are from Europe, June is from the US, and Rebel and myself, we're from Asia. Our mission is to feature talented independent artists who have inspiring stories to share, and we believe that art has the power to inspire and connect people through shared experiences. We showcase the art in an on-cyber virtual gallery. As we all know, a larger collection of art brings a cross-pollination of viewership that has helped quite a few of our artists reach collectors through sales. I'm glad to say that we've organically grown since into a community of artists and collectors, but most importantly, friends. With regular Twitter spaces like these, which are then recorded into podcast formats in Spotify and YouTube. The easiest way to get in touch with us would be to join our cozy Discord. Everything's on our link in our bio, so hit us up if you're an indie artist who needs help featuring your art, or if you just want to join a friendly art NFT community. Last but not least, we'd like to mention that nothing on this show should be construed as investment advice. This podcast is for informational purposes only. And with that being said, back to you, Jun.
Thank you, Casper. Welcome, AJ, to our Sunday space. I would like to know everything about rocks today, because rocks are just cool. And also up front, I wanted to ask you, how is your daughter doing?
Hey, thanks for having me up. Appreciate the space to talk about my art. My daughter is doing much better now. Her tongue is healing up just fine. I think we're almost fully healed on that. We dodged a bullet. You know, she didn't bite her whole tongue off. So we are very happy that she's okay and fine. So no worries on that. Besides that, no, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes, that's great to hear that she's doing well, because it's a very scary experience, as I can imagine. So yeah, AJ, tell us everything about how you actually got into art and how you started to paint over 200 rocks, limestone rocks, that you found on your 6-acre property in Texas.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll start from the beginning. I guess it was back in 2016, my wife and I, we were living in Austin, Texas. We were working our jobs, doing our normal thing down there in Austin. And then we just decided one day that we want to move out of the city and get some more land and some more space and build a bigger home, basically. Something more affordable that we could attain all those things outside the city that we couldn't necessarily get in Austin. So I guess around that time, we just started looking for land in between Austin and Dallas, because Dallas was closer to my wife's family. As we started looking around, we just found this neighborhood that was about a few miles off of the interstate that was a fairly affordable land per acre. And we purchased 6 acres. We were like, let's just buy the land and then see what happens. So after we bought the land, we started looking into home builders and finally found one that we liked and started moving through that process of having our house built. And then I guess it was finished around in 2017. 2017, early 2017, like March or so, it was finished and we moved in. And it was about the same time that my wife was pregnant with our twin boys, and we were moving into this new house. We were going to have these twins coming in June of that year. And then it was just decided that I would be a stay-at-home dad. So going from being a mechanic at Lexus and fixing cars and having jobs and doing all that kind of thing my entire life, being a home dad was a bit of a change, you know? So after they were born in June, I think my wife was home for probably the first 5 months or so after that. So it wasn't easy, but it was a little bit easier having two people involved. But then after she went back to work, it was just pretty much me and the twins all day. So there were times where it was good, but there were times where it was really bad and I was really struggling. During this time that I was here with the twins all day, I was thinking, okay, what am I going to do? What am I supposed to do besides just being a dad? So I was just brainstorming, looking around, doing different things around the house, fixing stuff. And I started just noticing all these rocks that I had in my property that were laying around everywhere. And I wasn't really sure exactly what to do with them, but I knew that I didn't want to haul them away. Like, I didn't want to have them taken off and then turned into concrete, like what happens to most of the rocks in the neighborhood. I just found it crazy to do that, to pay someone to take these rocks away. You know, I'm like, they're cool rocks. I'm not going to do that. So I basically just sat on them. I just put a lot of them in a pile in the back, and then the rest of them I just left where they were at. And I was like, I'll just leave the rocks. We'll see what happens. And then I would say it was probably in around March or so, or April of 2018, that I was just walking around my property, kind of looking around, not really doing much. You know, I was actually looking for stepping stones for my mother-in-law. And I caught a glimpse of this one rock that had this really cool shape and feature to it, but had a point on it. And it reminded me of a bird, like the beak of a bird. And I was looking at it and I was like, wow, this is really cool. I've never seen a rock like this before. And just the shape of it just like amazed me. I was like, man, this is awesome. It was sometime during that time that I saw that rock and I noticed a bird in it that I got this idea to paint it. And I don't really know where the idea came from. I guess it came from the fact that people paint rocks and paint the little circular stones and then leave them around the neighborhoods or in the city. And then you find a rock, you leave a rock. There's all those type of things when it comes to painting rocks. So I guess the idea maybe started where I first heard of painting rocks. But this rock that I found was different. It wasn't like those rocks. Like this rock had a particular shape that you don't see every day in a rock. And the idea that I had as far as painting the bird on the rock was different in a sense of I was going to paint the shape of the bird. You know, like the rock represented the entire bird and then I would paint it. So that idea was different, but I guess the initial idea came from the other people painting the little pebble stones. So, you know, after I saw this rock and I had this grand idea at the time, I went to the garage and grabbed some just old cans of spray paint that were laying around. The colors at the time were just off colors. I think I had some, like a light blue and an orange. I didn't even have that many cans of spray paint at the time. So I painted it and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. What else is out there? I had this idea of, okay, if I found this bird rock, what other rocks do they have laying around out here that I can find a shape in? So I just kind of kept looking around. It was fun just going out and searching for rocks. So I go out and look for rocks of whatever shape, whatever I could visualize something out of, you know. So I'd find a whole bunch of boats, like sailboats or people's faces, cars, all, you know, just different types of animals, just all different kind of recognizable shapes within the rocks. So then I just started painting them all. Every rock that I could find that looked like something, I would paint it. And then I started going out and I went out and bought more spray paint. Different colors, just started going at it full speed with basically spray paint and tape. That's pretty much what I use. I tape off my lines and then spray paint and then wait for it to dry and then tape off some more lines and then spray paint it. That's kind of a long process when you use spray paint because you got to cover up what you just painted. And then, like I said, spray paint a section, wait for it to dry, cover up another part. So it wasn't a very fast process unless I painted smaller stones. So, you know, I started doing that and I loved it. Like, it was just so much fun because I was like, wow, this is so cool. I've never done anything like this before. I was never an artist prior to painting that first rock. I never picked up a paintbrush in my life as far as for creating art. Yeah, I might have, I painted a wall, a solid color or whatever, but I never created art before. And so I was just like inspired. It was fun. It was something different, something to take me away from the everyday of just being a stay-at-home dad, you know, kind of like something for me, which I really needed at that time because I was really struggling being a stay-at-home dad. So, you know, after I did that for a little while, my wife actually told me, why don't you start posting them on Instagram, you know, create an Instagram account. So I guess it was probably a month or so, maybe 2 months later that I opened up my first Instagram account and then started posting my rocks there. And it was at that time, I guess, that I actually started getting feedback from like the artist community as far as my art. And I was able to actually, you know, get positive reviews in a sense, which kind of affirmed what I was doing because I didn't know, like I said, the plan was never to really become an artist. I didn't know that's what I was doing at the time. It wasn't until I got involved with the artist community that they informed me that I was doing artist work, you know? So that part of it was really eye-opening for me at the time because I didn't know I had a skill as far as being an artist. I didn't know I could paint. I didn't know that what I was doing was any good. I had no idea. All I knew at the time is that I liked it. Like I thought it was cool. But then when everybody else started saying how cool it was too, that kind of motivated me in a sense and pushed me forward to, okay, maybe I should keep going with this. I'm posting every day to Instagram, basically using my Instagram account to kind of just show my process and all that good stuff. And then I guess it was probably, I'd say, I don't know, around like maybe 75 rocks in or so that I was painting. I started questioning my artistic ability in a sense. I started wondering whether or not, you know, was it the rocks that made me an artist or was it that I could actually paint? Like I had no idea because everything I ever created was on a rock. So I didn't know if like the rocks were making my art art special, or was it me as an artist who made my art special? I just didn't know because I was so inexperienced at what I was doing. So it was at this time that like, I was, let me try it out on Canvas, you know, let me see what I create on Canvas. And then if I can create something that I like or that is good on Canvas, then I'll know that, okay, it's me as the artist and it's not just these rocks. So that's what I did. Painted, I created on a small little 10 by 10 canvas was my first painting that I ever did. Basically, I would just draw random lines onto it and then color in the shapes. So the first painting that I ever did on canvas, I didn't have any, like I said, I just drew random lines and colored in the shapes. I didn't look for anything particular. But as I started to kind of grow off of that, I would draw these random lines and then I would look inside of them to find familiar images within them, just like I would on my rocks. So then I started painting canvases as I was still painting rocks. You know, I was going back and forth, or I'd paint a canvas and be painting a rock at the same time. I would just do both. And basically what the canvas kind of opened my eyes up to, in a sense, was that inside of my rocks, you know how like the first rock I mentioned, it was like the shape of a bird, like the full rock was the shape of the bird. But what the canvases and the lines I was creating on canvas helped me realize is that inside of my rocks, like if I went down to a smaller level than the actual entire shape, there were all these different shapes and features inside of it, like on a smaller scale than the entire rocks. And when I looked at the rocks that way, I could see even more. There was so much more happening within this one rock than just based off of its shape. Inside of each rock has these just lines and features and cracks and just textures and all these things that are already there. They're just on a smaller scale. So when I started looking into those, I was like, wow, these shapes are even more amazing or just as amazing as the entire shape of the rock. So sometimes I could look at a rock and say, okay, I don't necessarily see something within the entire shape of it. But when I look deeper into the rock, I'll see something cool within there. It just opened up the rocks for me even more, because then instead of painting this full rock based off its shape into a bird or a car or a face or whatever, I would just paint the smaller shapes within each rock. And then I would paint those. And sometimes I would see something that I began with. I'd see an image in there and I'd go ahead and paint it. Or sometimes I would just paint the random shapes that I saw. And then whenever I was finished, I would look into it and then see what it is that I just painted. And when you do it that way, you start revealing things that you didn't even realize were there in the first place. You're basically filling in these spaces that were voided out. When you look at a bare rock, you can't really see it. But when you paint it, you know, and you paint the shape that's in there, it brings that shape out for everybody to see. You can't miss it now. So I just painted that rock, you know, I started painting the shapes inside of the rocks, and that just opened up everything for me. Like that really turned my eyes onto something completely new and different that I had never seen before. Just because, you know, I have a million rocks. Like you said before, I painted like over 200 rocks so far. I could paint even more if I had more space to keep them, you know. But not only did I paint those 200 rocks, but when you break those rocks down on a smaller scale, the number expands, you know. So there's an endless supply of creativity that I have in my yard. Breaking them down or scaling them down just opened up that even more. So now whenever I go out and look for a rock to paint, I don't just look at the shape of it. If I see a rock that's super cool and has this awesome shape to it, I'm like, okay, that's an awesome rock. And then I grab the rock and I don't just look at the outer shape. I look at the inner shape too. And I see what's on the inside of that. And on the inside of that is just like a whole new universe in a sense. So basically that kind of leads me in a sense to, you know, where I am today almost, you know, is that like I still paint my rocks and I go out and I look for them. I paint my canvas paintings. I incorporate the rocks into digital art, which is basically what my PFP is right now. The centerpiece there is my actual rock, and then I create art around it. So I'm still fully invested into my rocks. They will always be like a part of my practice, no matter what it is that I do, because they are the reason why I became an artist. I cannot abandon them. If I abandon the rocks, I feel like I'll be abandoning everything about me and my art, you know? So no matter what happens, the rocks will always be a part of that. And that pretty much, I think, nails it down as far as why I'm Rock of AJ's, you know, because my name is AJ. These are my rocks. The name actually came from my cousin. I was like, what am I going to name my art, I guess, in a sense? And he's like, why not Rock of AJ's? And I'm like, oh, wow, that works. It just kind of stuck. And then ever since, that's been it from now on. And I don't know if I would call it like a pseudonym, You know, it might be, it could be, it's in the middle, whether or not it's like my brand or an artist pseudonym or just like the name for my art, because I still go by AJ, like I'm AJ, but these are my rocks. And I just want to always make sure that they are up front and present for everyone to see. So I hope that answers your question as far as the initial question.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing your really inspiring story. And just shows me again that how much artists actually can find inspiration in nature. And just also learn something about your process that I find very interesting, because originally I wondered about what paint you actually use for these rocks. It blew my mind that you actually use spray paint. So I can imagine that it's also a very tedious process to use tape to create these very organic shapes over time.
Okay, so I'm glad you brought that up because I left a part out. I guess it was probably at some point within there. I don't know exactly what number rock that I was on that I shifted from spray paints to hand paints. So if I look at my collection, I'd have to look at the actual numbers as far as, you know, I try to keep track of them, but I'm saying maybe I'd say, I don't know, maybe 50 pieces in, I moved over to paint markers. Okay. But the differences between the paint markers that I use is that they're oil paint markers. So they look very similar to the spray paints. They do a good job as the spray paints, but I can work so much easier and quicker with the paint markers. So the spray paints that I used were mainly in the beginning, and I still use them on the larger rocks because I can just cover a whole bigger area with them now. But when it comes to the smaller rocks, I use these paint markers. But I do love the spray paints too, Yoon. They're awesome and fun as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, AJ. So I think we have a question from Kose Johannes about rocks in particular before we move on to your other medium like cameras. Johannes, go ahead with your question.
Yes, hello. Of course, I want to know everything about the rocks. When I'm with my family at sea, we always search for these stones with holes in the middle. Some people even say they have magical powers in the old mythology. And my question is, do you like too these rocks with special holes inside?
Yes, I love the rocks with the holes inside. For me, I seek out those rocks. Like whenever I see one with the hole in it, like it helps it, you know, in my opinion. Like it can make the rock be something else than if the hole wasn't there. And I find that it's super special how the holes are actually created, you know, at least for the rocks out here, is that a lot of the holes that form out here are weathered into that over time. And it can just be based off of the placement of the rock, like where it's located at, and then the rain over time dripping off of the tree and hitting that rock in the exact same spot over years and years that weathers that hole into it. And it just creates the most fascinating shapes as well. Like what I found too is that the holes in the rocks, sometimes the ones that don't go all the way through that you can see all the way through, they actually do go all the way through, but the water followed a different path. So it created a hole on top, but then it followed a path through the water and pops out on the other side in a different spot. Yeah, those holes and those features in the rocks, I think that they're even more special. And out here where I live, I find most of those special rocks like that underneath the trees. So if I go out and I go on a rock hunt, as I call it, I look underneath the trees and look and dig underneath the trees. That's where I find just the most fascinating rocks. You know, I like to call my land out here my rock garden, you know, because they literally grow up from the ground. Like every time it rains, it washes away some dirt and a new rock will kind of pop up. So I'll talk about the rocks with you all day if that's what y'all want to do. I love the rocks so much. They're my favorite, y'all.
I see. Yeah. And I even learned something because I always searching for rocks with holes inside when I'm at the sea, because there I know that the water, it's just removing parts from the stone, which were from a different material. So if one part of the stone is very hard and the other one is very soft, then after a while, a hole happens to be inside. But now I learned that these types of stone can even be created at land. I learned something about rocks. Thank you.
Yeah, totally. Because like I said, out here where I live, I've looked into the geology of Texas and like where we're actually at and like where I'm at. And basically like millions of years ago, this land that I have and where I'm at was like coastal land, you know? So part of it was submerged at times and other times it wasn't submerged. So most of these rocks were formed back in those days and into the shapes they are. And then the holes that I'm seeing in them, you know, a lot of those like I said, can be formed based off of the actual rain that's occurring more recently, you know, as far as weathering those holes into it, the ones that are on the surface. Most of the rocks that I find that are completely underground, they don't have the holes in them. Like what I see with the ones that are partially above the surface, that are underneath the trees, that the rain's been coming down. And like I said, when the rain hits the tree and then it comes down off of a limb, it's dropping in that same spot because water is going to find the path of least resistance. And it's going to keep following that path. So it hits the tree and it comes down the limbs and then it drips off in a spot. It drips off in that same spot over and over and over. And then that's what happens is it hits that rock in that same spot as well. And then until it weathers a hole straight through it. And I just find it super fascinating. You know, I found these rocks just, they're like the coolest thing to me. You know, the fact that people have lived here forever, you know, like my neighborhood, it's probably like 20 something years old or whatever, but people have been in this area for a long time. And these rocks have been here. They just didn't pop up, you know, whenever I moved out here. I'm just the one that saw something different in them. Basically, I saw art within the rocks themselves. I always say that the rocks are amazing on their own. Just the having the rock itself without anything on it, I think they're the most beautiful form of natural art. So all I do is basically add paint to them to therefore now they stick out even more and people see them. If you're looking at this tweet pinned up at the top right now and all of this was just white from the canvas to the rocks, you'd probably be like, oh, I wouldn't really notice it. But when you add color to it, now all of a sudden it stands out and people see it. And that's one of the things that I wanted is that I wanted to bring these rocks into the vision of people so people can look at them for the beauty that they are. And yeah, I add paint to them and I make them brighter, you know, but if I didn't do that, nobody would look at them, you know. So in the end, I want to bring awareness to how beautiful these rocks are, how amazing nature is, and basically tell people to quit destroying them because a lot of people out here will destroy these rocks and turn them into concrete, you know, where I'm like, no, let's leave the rocks how they are and just keep their natural beauty alive for everyone.
Thank you, AJ. We love your passion for rocks. So I would like to talk a bit about your inspiration. And I really love some of your large canvas work because they remind me of some of the abstract work by Clifford Still. These color field, large abstract paintings with organic edges, I would say, which is representative of the abstract expressionists at that time. And I read on your website that you also see yourself as influenced by a mix of abstract expressionists and surrealism. And I would like to learn more about what you mean by immediacy of expression that is part of your work.
Yeah, of course. As I told y'all before, I was not an artist or had anything to do with art prior to 2018. I went to a few museums, like I went to the Louvre before. I've seen art, you know, but I didn't necessarily understand it and I definitely never created it. So whenever I first started painting these rocks and getting into it, I started looking at art. I started Googling artists and looking around and seeing things and trying to understand where exactly my art basically fit into the art world. And what this did is it opened my eyes to all these different styles and all these different types of art. And so I'm basically, like I said, I'm looking for artists who are creating what it was that I was creating. Now, when it comes to the rocks, that was very difficult. I couldn't find much anything to relate it to. You know, like I couldn't really find anyone out there doing what I was doing with the rocks. I found some off the wall artists back in the day who built a castle with rocks, you know, but they definitely weren't painting them.
But tell us the story. It's very interesting.
Oh, the story of the castle?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So basically, as I was looking around for someone who, you know, who did what I did with the rocks, I was searching. I came across this guy from France. His name was Ferdinand Chaval. And basically, he was a postal, like a mail carrier, who had land out there where he lived. And basically, one day, he was walking around on his land, like very similar to the way that I had done it. And he came across these sandstones, which is basically limestone, very similar. And he saw the same thing that I did, right? He saw the beautiful shapes of the stones and thought, wow, this is amazing. So basically what he did with his is he devoted his life to basically creating this castle. He called it his ideal palace. And he just built this amazing castle in the countryside of France, you know, out of these same rocks, very similar rocks to what I have. And he was inspired by the rocks the same way. So like when I found this guy, I'm like, wow, this is really cool. I just love everything about the story. I love how he found them. I love how he gathered them all together. I just, I love how he put the rocks into this castle. I love how he saw how the stones were shaped by water and basically, in a sense, validified what it was that I was seeing. Just because this guy did this way back in the early 1900s. So I thought it was just amazing. When I look at his rocks, they're a little bit different than mine when I see the photos of them. However, the idea and the inspiration from nature is all the same. Like I said, this guy, Chabal, it's in the southeast part of France, and it's called his Ideal Palace. And if any of you guys are over there, y'all go check it out for me and take some pictures because I want to see it one day. It's on my bucket list to go out there and check out this palace. But it's really just the most amazing thing. Like I said, you can Google Ferdinand Chabal, and it'll tell you his whole story. And it's just really beautiful. I love it. But yeah, so that's the story of him as far as me looking for someone who to compare the rocks to. But to get back to your question, Yoon, about the abstract expressionism part, that part goes a little bit deeper. Back in 2012, I was working at AT&T working on telephone lines or whatnot. And then I got laid off and I was like, okay, so what am I going to do with my life? So I started looking into being a mechanic just because I like working with my hands. I thought it was a job that I could get into and put my headphones on, fix someone's car, and then make good money doing it. I was determined to like teach myself how to become a mechanic. So I signed up for these automotive classes that they had at the community college in Austin. And in order to get my associate's degree, I had to take your basic courses like your English and your math and all that good stuff. So I took my algebras and did all that. And then the next course, they were like, okay, you can go to Algebra 2, whatever. Or I could take this college mathematics course. And I didn't really know what college mathematics was at the time. I was just like, okay, I'm pretty good at algebra, but I didn't necessarily like it. I was like, I want to try something different. So I got into this college mathematics course, which I didn't know what it was at the time. But it had a little bit of algebra in there too, but also the teacher had us learning about fractal mathematics. And it was at this time that we started learning about these fractals, which are basically random odd shapes that equal a whole. You know, on a smaller scale, you have this small little shape, but if you add all the smaller shapes together, the larger scale shape equals the smaller shapes. And it's a little something that's a little bit difficult to explain. But as I was taking the class, I was learning about it in real time, you know, and I didn't really understand it myself at the time. It was a new form of mathematics that wasn't discovered until the 80s. And so I'm learning about these fractals and I'm trying to teach myself about them. And I didn't really know what I was doing because it was so difficult to wrap my brain around what these actual fractals were. So I was Googling it and I actually came across an article about Jackson Pollock and his paintings. And this was in 2012. And there were these professors who were trying to determine whether or not they had a real Pollock painting or a fake Pollock painting. And the way they were doing it was using fractal mathematics by analyzing the patterns that he created within his paintings and then scaling them and basically saying, okay, this has a scale of fractal usage of 5.5, whereas a fake would have a scale of fractal units of usage of 1.0. So they could determine whether or not it was a real Pollock painting or a fake Pollock painting based off of them analyzing the fractals within it. And I just thought that was cool. I was learning about fractals and then I came across an artist and I just put that information in the back of my head, you know, never really went back to it until I became an artist and I started discovering my rocks and I'm starting to paint my rocks. And then at that time, I was thinking about transferring over to canvas paintings when all of a sudden that memory of the fractals and Jackson Pollock came into my head. And then it fascinated me even more this time because now I'm learning how to be an artist. And then also I'm starting to see these fractals within my rocks. It was at this time that I really started looking into Pollock and then looking into the other artists of his time, the other abstract expressionists from like you said, Clifford Steele to Rothko, to all those guys and see what it was that they were doing. And it was really Pollock who influenced me in a sense on canvas to like create my lines randomly from my subconscious, like an immediate form of expression. You know, that's where the name for my exhibition, Immediate Expression, would be creating my line. You know, so I don't go into my lines with any thought. I just look at a blank canvas. Sometimes I'll even close my eyes and just start drawing random lines across it. Sometimes I'll use my left hand instead of my right hand just to shake it up and you'll get a different angle of your lines or different curves. So what I did is I used the way that Pollock would basically use his paint. He would dance around on the canvas. You know, it looked very organic to me. It looked like he was dancing. It looked like it was in harmony. He wasn't just throwing paint on a canvas in all these different spots all wildly. Like, he had an approach to it that was in balance. It was harmonic. And I could see that by watching him. So I would take that idea of this balance and harmony and use that on canvas to create my lines. And then once my lines were placed, then I would go into it with my color. And that's where it's more or less like the color field paintings, where more thought goes into my placement of the color and my color choice and where they're at. So one part of it is immediately expressed as far as my lines, but then everything after that requires, you know, lots of thought and process. Sometimes I'll sit and stare at a physical painting for 3 days before I place a color. And that's just all part of the process. Like I said, immediate expression is basically the immediacy of the thought, the immediacy of those first initial lines, you know. And then, like I said, after that, it's not quite as immediate, you know, it's a little bit slower, but that's where it all begins.
Thank you, AJ. Very inspiring. And to my understanding, immediacy can also mean let intuition guide you in your creative process, right? Just go with the first intuition that you have when you create your art.
Yeah, absolutely. I think intuition plays a huge role in our art, right? You follow your heart. I think intuition led me all the way up to this point, and even within a particular piece. In my opinion, intuition is the thing that tells an artist, okay, this is right, or this is wrong, or it's complete, or it's not complete, you know, because you can always keep going. Like, when I draw my lines, I could draw an extra line. I have to know when to stop and when it's right. And that's where I think like intuition plays a role, at least in my art.
Yeah. Tell us also a bit about the way people respond to your art. What kind of message do you want to convey through your work to your audience?
I guess that's a little bit difficult question, you know, because I guess there's so many messages that I'd like to convey, but I don't know whether or not I'm conveying them. I speak a lot through my art. My art tells the story of my life, you know, like everything that I've been through in my entire life, I'm putting out on canvas. Whenever I paint something, I don't know exactly what part that is at that time or what it is I'm trying to say. But over time, as I stare at it, I understand it more and more. One of the things with my rocks that I want people to get from it and to understand is just the power of nature and what it can actually do, and how it heals, and how we are supposed to be out there in nature. We're not supposed to be in these big cities all the time. And it's okay to be there, but then also you need to get out. Like, you need to get out into the woods. You need to get out into the mountains. You need to get to the beach. You need to get out into nature. So with my art, I want people to be reminded of that 100% when looking at my rocks, for sure. But the other thing that I want people to take from my art or to look at it is that, like, you got to slow down. It's very important to slow down and take a deeper look at things. Like, if I had never slowed down and walked and caught this glimpse of that bird rock that I saw initially, I might not be an artist today. Basically, what it took was just having this different perspective of, like I said, I was putting into a position of being a stay-at-home dad and not really knowing where my life was going in that moment. And then I'm outside in nature searching for peace. I'd go outside every day after my wife got home and just listen to silence because I was around these twins all day. So, like, I was going outside and I was slowing my life down, and I just caught this glimpse of the rock. And if it wasn't for me doing that in that perspective, I might not be here today. Like I said, I want to remind everyone that we need that. Like, you need to do that. Like, if you want inspiration, it's just right around the corner. If you can just take yourself out of your normal habitat that you're in every day and go put yourself in a different spot for 5-10 minutes, you can find it right there. And for me, it was a matter of, I found everything that I was looking for. I found a bigger purpose. I found peace in my mind. I found art that, like, I had no idea was ever inside of me. I never knew I could paint until I found the rocks. And I found all those things just by slowing down, clearing my mind, and looking at something that we see every day, a rock, just a rock. But to 99% of the people on the planet, it's just a rock. But I slowed down and I looked at it from a different perspective and saw these rocks as something more, you know, something more, something like this castle that Ferdinand Chaval saw. That's what it takes. And that's all you need to be inspired.
That's sad. And I think, like, intuition played a huge role, not just in your art, but also along all decisions in your life. You discovered fractal mass, and then you went into abstract expressionism and found the work of Jackson Pollock. But at the point when you experienced, you didn't really know what it means, but all this came together after you found a rock on your property, and then everything started to make sense.
Yeah, it's true.
So yeah, that's amazing. Yeah,
it's so true, because I was 36 years old, I guess, whenever we moved out here and bought this property and moved out here. career. And for 36 years of my life, I was always searching for something. I felt like I was always looking for something. Like, yeah, I worked all these jobs, but I never really liked it. It never felt like it was right for me. And then just like I said, on a whim, I felt like I wanted to get out of the city. And we just bought some land, randomly placed land that I didn't really know too much about. And all of that was just like me following my heart. I felt something was missing and I was going out there looking for it. And all of that is just following, like you said, intuition. It was just me feeling like something was missing, following it, and just seeing where it was going to take me. And it all led me to here. It led me to finding these rocks and finding my art, to, you know, creating the art, to being here on this stage, speaking to you all about my art. All of those decisions that I made were intuition. And that's why even today, I still follow my heart. I do everything with my art based off my heart. Like somebody can tell me something over here. Oh, yeah, you need to do this or you should do that. And I always check back with my heart. I'm like, what does my heart say? If my heart says do it like this, that's what I'm following with my heart. And like you said, that is intuition.
So would you say that you are not one of these people who overthink, try to overanalyze whether you should move on with a decision? So you just go with what feels right.
I go with what feels right when it comes to like me creating my art. And even for the most part of, you know, even like promoting my art, although I will say like that part of it, like when you come to promotion and sales and all that kind of stuff, I can overthink that a little bit more just because that's a completely different world as far as from the creation process. So there are aspects in my life where I do overthink things, but for the most part, like with my art and then making decisions that, you know, feel right to my heart, I don't overthink them. I just go with the flow. But there's other more concrete things, like I said, when it comes to like, okay, my kids cried in there, you know, and they need to eat. I'm not going to overthink that. I'm going to go cook that food. So there are things that I don't overthink. And then there are things that I do overthink. But for the most part, when it comes to my art, I have to follow my heart, right? Like everything's coming from the inside. I feel like my heart, it won't lead me wrong, right? Like now it might not work out. Like I might follow my heart and something doesn't work out, but I'll never be mad at my heart, right? I'll never feel like, oh, that was a bad decision because my heart led me there. So that's one of the things that I always fall back on. Like if there's two ways to go and I don't really know, then just follow your heart. And even if it doesn't work out, it's not going to be the wrong way. It'll be the right way.
Fantastic. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, AJ. So to my understanding, you initially also started to create art to carve out a space for your own, right? When you maybe have been a little bit overwhelmed with parenting. And I wonder whether your children also influenced the way you create art a bit.
I definitely see them creating art. I think that they are more likely to want to create art because of, you know, what they see me doing. And then I think that the fact that their dad is doing something with art, then that just makes them more comfortable doing it. And they wouldn't feel embarrassed to put a piece of art out there. A lot of your art and what you create, what you put out to the world for them to see, it comes from, you have to be confident. In it. You have to believe that people want to see your art and that you're giving them something that is valuable whenever they do look at it. So I believe that I'm providing that for my kids through my art. I'm not really an art teacher, you know, so I'm kind of like the guy painting over here, but I know that it's influencing my kids and they see it. My wife is better as far as like getting out there with the paints and getting the paper out and letting the kids just do whatever they want with the art. I'm a clean painter. I like for my work area to stay like, you know, I don't like paint everywhere. I don't really like that. But my kids, that's how they paint. If you give them some watercolors and paint, that stuff's going to be everywhere. So like I said, my wife is better at that aspect of it, getting out there. But I even think I help influence her as well as far as creating art. Like when you have someone who's here every day painting and creating, that rubs off on you, right? It has to, no matter what it is someone's doing. Like if somebody was here dancing all day and listening to music, then that would rub off on me. I would be wanting to just dance in my seat, you know? So it 100% influences them. And what I hope that it does is they don't have to grow up to be artists or whatever it is, but I hope that what I'm doing today shows my kids to follow their heart and have confidence in it and have confidence in that that is the right decision. And I think that it's doing that. You know, we'll find out later on in life.
Yeah, I love that you create such an inviting space for your children, or encouraging space to create art, right? It's an early point in their life to learn to be creative. And I think this is really amazing for children. And yeah, we have a couple of minutes left before the end of our space and would like to move to your digital art. So you initially started out with rocks, but then you moved on to canvas, paintings, and later on, you also started to create digital art around rocks, particularly your latest empty collection, Drag Queen, which basically has a particular rock in the center of the story. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, the digital aspect of it was something that I was playing with, I guess, sometime in maybe 2019. I had taken a photo of my rock, and I was on my Mac, and I was able to like take out the background and just, you know, put in some other stuff like, I don't know, I would name my rocks, certain names, and then I would like create some art, like I'd make the name and then I'd put the picture underneath it. And just to kind of, I don't know, I was just playing around. I was like, there's nothing I can do with the digital art. I didn't have anything I could do with it. But it wasn't until like the NFTs came around, you know, that I started noticing them, that I would say it was probably sometime in 2021 that I began to notice them. And then a couple of artists that I was following on Instagram were getting into NFTs. And I was reaching a spot too where I was like, I didn't know where I was going with my art. You know, COVID just happened and shut everything down for 2020 for this whole year. And I was like, man, that just basically put a nail in my coffin. And as far as getting my art out to the world, I had a couple exhibition things that I had lined up that fell through and never came back after COVID. So I was at a low spot, and then NFTs came around and I noticed these people making digital art. And I was like, hey, I already did a little bit of my rocks before. Why don't I jump into that, you know? And so that's what I did. I started creating art out of that, this one rock. That's my PFP, the Drag Queen rock. And I was like, I'm going to make a collection of 20 pieces with this rock. And I would basically photograph the rock and then remove the background and turn just the rock into a PNG image without a background. And then I would get digitally on my phone at this time and create a background or a scene or whatever you want to call it. And then I would insert the rock into it. I would try to incorporate the physical rock that I had into a digital piece of art. So basically what it is, it's two pieces of art combined into one, you know. And I thought that was a really cool idea. You know, I was like, not only do I have these rocks that I've never really seen before as far as me painting them, and now they have these physical sculptures, but I could create a piece of digital art with that as well and do something completely different with it too. So that just kind of led me to everything in a sense. You know, like I started off with 20 pieces in that collection of early 2021, and then it like just stopped. I just kind of, you know, I went to some other rocks, made 20 pieces out of another rock. And then eventually I came back to it this year to increase on this collection and push this collection to 100 pieces. I just wanted to expand it. I had a few collectors in the beginning in the first collection, and I was like, I think I need to push it further. Let me push it further to give it a second run and see what happens. So that's where I'm at with this collection here. But that also, by doing that and getting into taking my rocks and put them in the digital format, what it did is open my eyes to creating my normal canvas paintings digitally as well. So I went out and I bought an iPad, and I decided, okay, I'm going to try to do what I do on a physical canvas. I'm going to try to do that on a digital canvas on my iPad. And I'm able to do that. It's a little bit different because you're working on this little 10 inch, you know, and I'm trying to create these random lines that normally I can make all big. And in the physical world, I have to scale it down into the digital world. But like I said, by taking the rocks and putting them in the digital format, not only did it create this art where I could merge the two together, but then I could also take my canvases that I was creating in the physical world and make those two in a digital format, which, I love it because it's so much, it's quicker and it's smaller, and I can sit on the couch and do it. And then I can play with the colors a little bit more. You have a full spectrum of colors on the iPad. So I can put colors in places. And then if I'm like, oh, I don't like that, I can remove it. So I can just do different things with the digital art that I can't do physically. So that's one of the things that I like about it. I still enjoy painting physically. I like it more. I'd rather paint in the physical world all day long. But what digital art does is it fixes the space problem, you know, the constraint of space to where I don't have any more wall space really to put any more canvases. I painted so many rocks in the beginning of those 200 that I gave a lot of them to my family members. I sold some, and then I still had so many that I had to put them outside and give them back to earth, you know, and let the weather take them back. So in reality, when it comes to an artist and what it is that you can create, it comes down to the space at which you can hold it. If you run out of space in your home or your studio or whatever, where are you going to put these pieces that you create? For me, it's very hard for me to create a piece and then paint over it or just let it go. Like, I love it. I love every piece that I create. And I feel like even if it's not the most beautiful piece, it's still relevant, you know, and I hate letting it go. So digital art has opened up my storage space to where I can create even more, even when I don't have the space.
I agree about what you said, that digital art help you to deal with this storage issue. Casper, do you want to ask your question about digital art you have been interested in?
Yeah. So just a very quick question about the reception of your art between the digital format and the physical side. I know we're kind of in an NFT bear market right now, but in the balance of things, which has been the more popular medium so far for you?
Well, I guess it depends on how you define popularity. You know, if you're just defining it off of like engagement and feedback from the crowd, I guess, or from people seeing it, I'd say it's pretty close to the same. But if you define it off of sales and how much you're actually selling, you know, of actual art, then for me, it would be obviously in the digital world and NFTs, I've been able to sell more than I was able to sell as far as my physical art, just because I think it's easier to get it out there and people to necessarily spend the money. I don't know, but both of them are popular. I think people like both styles. I think people like the rocks just as much as they like my canvas paintings. And I think they like the digital. But then there are those different factions of people. There are people in the traditional art world who don't want you even touching digital art. And I guess those people might not like it. But I think for the most part, it's fairly even across the board as far as which ones people like the most. But honestly, when I really think deep about it, what seems to connect with people the most or get their attention the most are my physical rocks. The actual rocks themselves. That is what sparks the most interest from people. They see those and they're like, oh, wow, that's cool. And they are, because they are really cool. You know, when I look back on everything, I paint my canvas paintings in a sense, and I create my digital canvas paintings. Everything I create is to bring eyes back to the rocks. Like, that is initially, and that is always what I want people to see. So the fact that people do see that a little bit more, that makes me happy. But like, whenever I paint a big old canvas painting, and it opens up people's eyes, because people do see that. Like, if you post a picture of this massive canvas painting on Instagram, it's going to do better as far as engagement wise than one of my rocks. It will, just because it's bigger and people see it and they're like, oh, and then they're used to it. That's what they're comfortable with seeing, are these canvas paintings. But what that does is that provides me with that click back to my art, and then they're going to click back to my website, and then that's going to take them to Rock of AJ's and learn about the rocks and all those things. So like, I'll lure people in a sense with these big canvas painting. And then once they get here, I'm like, here, check out this rock, because you're going to like it better once you actually understand it.
Yeah, it's really, really intriguing. Thanks for sharing.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, I love this. Sorry. Your rocks definitely stand out and this entire story. So that's very unique. We're actually already beyond our space time, but it's just really so inspiring to talk to you. And I have just one last question, which is what you think about the role of art in our society, and why do you think it's important for people actually to appreciate art?
I've never been asked that question before, but I'd love to answer it. I think that art is healing. Like, art takes you to a place that is almost in a sense outside of everything that we live. Like, we live in this world of things happening every day. You're on social media, you're on the news, you're seeing all this stuff, real life. Art kind of takes you out of that for a minute. If you're able to sit there and stare at a piece, and that is beneficial to you, to everyone to experience that. And that role it has on society is it. Like, that's what it's there for. Like, that's what people need to see that more in a sense. I think that our society or the world in general is too distracted with everything else. They don't slow down enough to actually consume the art like you're supposed to. You need to look at it. You need to stare at it. You need to think about it. You need to put yourself in the place of that art. And I think that it's our job as artists, in a sense, to get people to understand that and get people to see that value of art that is there. And if we can do that, not only does it help that person, you know, whoever is looking at the art, helps them understand it more, but then it helps you as an artist, because they might actually buy one of your pieces of art, you know? And so that's a good thing as well. In my opinion, that's the role that art should provide. It should provide society with an outlet from everyday life. And if you look at art that way, you will see a value in it more so than if you just go out and buy a piece of art that matches your couch or matches your furniture or whatever it is, you know, like buy art for the actual art itself, for what it gives and what it does, and not necessarily I'm going to buy this art because, like I said, it goes good in my living room. I don't really like art for those reasons, you know. That's the role that it has to play, especially when it comes to my art. Like I said, my art is infused with nature, and I know for a fact that you get all of those things from nature. Like if you go outside and you go out into the mountains or you go out to the beach, it cleanses your mind. It's where we're supposed to be. We're a part of Earth. We're a part of nature. We're humans. We're all part of this entire ecosystem. And what art does when created by humans is it brings that ecosystem into your home or into a gallery or anywhere where you can go out and look at it. And that's the value that it brings to society. I just think that people need to start seeing it more, understanding that value, because most of them don't. Most people don't see that value of the art. You know, they only look at it in terms of, okay, how much does it cost? Does it look good over my couch? You know, and those type of things. Whereas for me, I'm like, oh, wow, that's an awesome piece of art. I really love that piece of art. I don't care what it looks like with my furniture. All I care is what I'm getting back from that piece of art. And if you stare at it and you get all that back, everything else doesn't matter. So in my opinion, that's the role that it has. Whether or not society recognizes it and pushes our children to that, I don't think we do enough. You know, I don't think that society pushes us to art enough, mainly because it's not really one of those jobs that necessarily a lot of people make a lot of money off of, you know, and society today is like, okay, get out, make money. So we push our kids away from the art because of those reasons right there. I think that the role that it plays is just to provide us with that outlet, that space to clear our heads and then get the healing powers of art back and then go back to your day job. Like, that's what we all need. We need more art.
Fantastic. And so great to talk to you and learn about your story. I think it has been inspiring for all our listeners today. And I think your exhibition, Immediate Expression, is still going on, right? If people are around, I think in Allentown, Pennsylvania, then they can go check out your art there in life.
Yeah, it'll be up until some like late August, I believe. So if y'all are in the Philadelphia area, it's about a 45-minute drive from Philly to Allentown at Muhlenberg College out there. It's pretty much open 6-7 days a week. So you could just pretty much just walk in and you can see the art. You don't need tickets. It's free. But if you're in the area, that's where it's at. Also, I have the link to it up on my YouTube channel to where you can actually see the exhibition when I was there speaking about it.
Yeah, amazing. We will make links to our show notes. So thank you so much, AJ. It was very great to talk to you, and happy Sunday, everyone. Go and touch some rocks today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.